Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Please consider supporting Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
Hey, my name's Adam from Toronto, Ontario, and I subscribe to the Creative Control Patreon because I feel that at the end of the day, there are very few people in the industry who are able to consistently get the kind of quality interviews out of very diverse subjects of many creative stripes and disciplines, as Vish does pretty well on every episode of the podcast. It's a no-brainer to me that I want to support this when you factor that in to all of the bonus content you get on Patreon. And, you know, it's a listener-supported podcast, so I want to keep the great content coming. So that's why you should also support Creative Control on Patreon.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Jennifer Castle is a wondrous musical force who originally hails from Toronto, Ontario. Currently based a couple hours west of her hometown, Castle actually used her own home as a studio so that she and her dear colleague, the engineer and producer Jeff McMurrick, could capture a more solitary and instinctual recording. The resulting album is a beautiful one called Monarch Season, which is available on October 16th, 2020, via Edey Fix in Canada and Paradise of Bachelors in the United States and beyond. Jennifer and I connected recently for a talk about Monarch Season, Butterflies and the Moon, the National Basketball Association and the psychology of performance, being a doula and a mother, future plans, and more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol and Massey Hall's concert film series live at masseyhall.com where you can stream dozens of 30-minute films for free, including performances by past and even current podcast guests like Jennifer Castle, plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, this is the 571st episode of Creative Control, featuring the talented and lovely Jennifer Castle, with your host, me, Vish Khanna.
The butterfly days are here. The butterfly days are here. The butterfly days are here.
Hi, Jen. How's it going?
I'm good, Vish. Hi, how are you?
I'm well. First of all, where in the world are you?
I am in Port Stanley, Ontario, which is in Elgin County, which is in southwest Ontario on the shores of Lake Erie.
Ah, and how are things there?
Things here are okay. They are... it's beautiful right now. I'm looking at the lake. It's a bit rainy. I'm safe and sound, and yeah, just going about my Thursday.
Nice. Are you particularly pleased that you are no longer in Toronto, given the current state of affairs? By state of affairs, there are so many layers to that. But yes, are you particularly happy not to be in a big city?
I'm counting my blessings to be where I am at this particularly strange time in history regarding the pandemic. Yes.
Yeah.
I was born in Toronto and I love Toronto. I'm going into my fifth year not being in Toronto. And I feel like having to lock down in Port Stanley really kind of finished the psychological move from Toronto, because it took me a long time and I was really going back and forth a lot. And I really felt of two places. And now I really feel like I'm here.
Good. No, that's great. I mean, interestingly, unlike some of my Ontario colleagues and friends, I've actually seen you since I moved to Edmonton. I saw you in Edmonton. Do you remember this?
I saw you in Edmonton. Yeah, I saw you there this year even, which is bizarre.
It's kind of bizarre. We didn't know that that might be one of the last times we ever see each other for the rest of our lives, but it's true. And
well, that makes it very glad that that happened.
Well, I've made comments on the show about how I've only been to two or three shows since moving to Edmonton in January, and I love that one of those three shows was you.
Yeah.
And
you had just arrived. I mean, when did you move? Before the
just
did
like,
you move in 2019?
Well, technically, just like the very last. You know, dog days of December, 27th or 28th. And then,
yeah.
And then, yeah, I think I had shipped our 2005 Toyota Matrix here. And it took longer to get here than
that's right.
So that was my inaugural trip in my Ontario car, was to go see your show. And then, unfortunately, I discovered within a month that, It was not going to pass its out-of-province inspection. So I spent a considerable amount of money getting that car ready in Ontario for its inspection in Alberta. And they were like, no, the car is more than 2 years old. Honestly, like it doesn't pass the thing. So they said, no, it's too beat up underneath. And so I was very frustrated. I love that car. The 2005, yeah. I don't know if you know the 2005 Toyota Matrix, but it's a wonderful car. It's very spacious and no problems, not a single problem with that thing. And I get here, and they told me I can't legally have it here. So anyway, yes, now that you say
this. Do you feel like that was foreshadowing for just 2020? Where you were like, oh, this is all going great. And then it was just like, no, you shan't have your proper papers, nor anything else
You have to spend a ton of money on a new car for your family. Yeah, it's I've made this joke many times, but it does feel like... we brought the world to its knees just by leaving Guelph, Ontario, because
that's right.
Everything seems to have gone badly. Like, again, I've said this too, and I don't know if I've talked to you about it, but I couldn't have because we haven't talked about this, but it is weird to me that I left a place and everyone was like, aren't you going to miss the restaurants? Aren't you going to miss right. the concerts and the events? I was like, yeah, that'll be tough, but it's fine. I've had my fair share of all that. Can always come mm-hmm. back and visit. And now nobody really can experience the things that I was supposed to have missed. So I feel
true.
I know you are into the mystic and the magical. Is it conceivable, Jen, that I am some sort of conduit, some sort of magical being that it was, you know, holding the fabric, the sociocultural fabric together with my puny arms? Is that possible?
I mean, I think you did this. I'm convinced that this was you.
I don't like it. I don't want this power. It's like an involuntary superhero, you know? You're like, I don't want to be special.
That's
but
right.
It does seem odd.
Well, you need to be very you need to accept it's a superpower and then be very cautious when you move next time. Time it very well.
Well,
maybe like 2030 or another really significant year.
It is very weird. It's 2020. That's true. In hindsight, if I may, they say hindsight is 2020, but in hindsight, we shouldn't have moved clearly because everything would probably be just fine.
Everything would not be broken.
Yeah, I feel badly. Do you feel like, again, I alluded to the fact that you have some, it comes across on your beautiful new record, Monarch Season, as well. Some connection to, I don't know how to describe it. Actually, before I go too far into suggesting that you yourself might be a mystical, magical person with a belief system in, you know, certain things, can you maybe characterize what's going on in terms of just the title? Just the title, Monarch Season. What does that connote for you?
Well, I've thought about that, and it's a very sort of literal riff of the time of year where the butterflies come through where I live. I live on a migratory path, so I live right by a place called Hawks Cliff, and we get the hawks and the eagles and the turkey vultures and the butterflies kind of come to nest, eat, feed, and pass through the shores of where I live. So monarch season, you know, beyond seeing some monarch butterflies in the summer, like I always did, it is a really sort of much more eventful feeling here because you see really so many of them. So it was easy for me to say monarch season when I went to write that song and to name it that because it kind of encapsulated the time of year of which I really felt like was infused in this record, because there weren't any boundaries between the inside or the outside world when we wrote it. It was different to studio scenarios where you really kind of isolate. This, I mean, I have pictures of Jeff McMurrick, who engineered and co-produced the record. Miking the waves and miking the outside and just kind of saying, if we can't shut it out, let's really bring it in.
Huh.
And Monarch Season, just, it felt like a nice thing to name the record because it also had this, the butterflies also have this wonderful journey through that they go on between here and Mexico, which this area and Mexico, which felt really significant at a time where there's so much talk about borders on this continent.
Yeah.
So it felt like they felt like free beings to me. And I also kind of love to think about large arcs in general. And I like to zoom out and think about large arcs because it helps me access my endurance and my patience for things that sometimes get when I zoom into the small things, I'll get frustrated and then I can zoom out and say, no, there's this large arc happening. And I can participate on that sort of level of scene. So Monarch Season just felt like a nice thing to call this record. And of course, there's a song called Monarch Season.
Yeah, no, and it's a beautiful song and it's a beautiful sentiment. You recorded this in your kitchen and you mentioned that Jeff brought the outside in. And I think you alluded to some of the reasons maybe why that was done, but can you elaborate upon that a little bit? Why not head into a studio as you normally might, and why not, you know, make a record, or why infuse it so much with the atmosphere and the environment? Most engineers are like, quiet, shh.
I know.
We got to shut everything, shh. You turn the air conditioner off. That freezer is making too much noise. This is the opposite of that. It does feel very outdoorsy on that level. But yeah, can you maybe elaborate upon both of those things? Why your kitchen? Why bring the outside in? What else were you going for there?
Well, I had been touring for almost 2 years when I wrote this record last summer. I had been touring Angels of Death. And I'd really been going. I'd been, for me, especially too, in context. I know to other people, they're like, you are not going. You are not busy musician person. But it feels like I'm busy for me because I also try to be at home a lot and raise my son. So I was busy in my mind, very busy.
And bigger tours, if I might say, weren't you opening?
Yeah.
Opening for bigger people and stuff like that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was really passing in front of a lot of people.
Yeah.
I was in bigger auditoriums and on bigger tours, and I was driving, and I had a 7-piece band, and I was, you know, really pushing. And Angels of Death, as a record, had lots of big sentiments and big grooves and hooks, and it was this sort of big thing, and I was pushing it. And then I got to a point of last summer, probably right around August. I think we recorded at something like August 18th or 19th or something like that. And the most part of it, the part that came in my kitchen, we did a little bit in Toronto, but the bulk of it was here. And I just said to Jeff, I don't want to go anywhere to make this record. I just want to come be at home. And also I felt like the songs, as they were starting to collect, were very simple, simple, simple songs. Almost the opposite of what I had recorded with Angels of Death, which felt like there was a trick to them. Like I was trying to outsmart some concept. I was trying to like be heady about something. And with Monarch Season, as these songs started to take shape, it was the opposite. It was about listening to something quiet and not moving and being still enough to say sometimes the simple sentiments. And so I felt like as soon as I left my house, I was working, and I didn't want to be working at this record. I wanted this record to not be it's a piece of work, but I wanted it to be kind of I didn't want anything to happen to the songs as they were in my kitchen. I was like, I want to record these. And even when I go to a studio still, you know, I can be, all the parts of my personality are there. And then it's like 1, 2, 3, 4. And then it's like serious. I'm recording the song now.
Yes.
And I just wanted to not perform them in some way. And that way, because I also did improvise them a little bit as I was recording them, they weren't all fully created. I just improvised a few takes of songs that were almost finished. And I didn't want to shape them up into too much. I wanted to see if I could capture them at their most simple versions. So it felt like home cooking.
Does simple in this context mean instinctual as well? Like the kind of, maybe casual. Does that make sense?
Maybe.
Like you caught them early and didn't fuss over them, so to speak. Is that fair?
Yeah, and also they weren't very cerebral to me. I mean, sometimes I can think of an idea, and then I love writing. I love the kind of solving riddles in writing, and I can really start to work a concept. And that had been how Angels of Death had gone for me. I mean, yeah. I really got into writing that. I was like, we need to solve some problems here.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, and this, yeah, I just wanted the sentiments to be more kind of felt in the body, more just felt that I liked to sing them, more quiet, like as if I was hearing the sentiments for the first time. And so that they even sort of surprised me, like by the end of recording them, I was like, oh, this is actually like a really romantic, heartfelt record. You know, a very sort of just intuitively sung record of songs, these songs, and I like to sing them this way. Also, yeah. I was in a place where, a monarch just flew by. Oh, two of them just flew by.
Get out of here. Really? Just now?
Yeah, because it is the season now, too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so every time I see them now, right now, I'm like, thank you. But, but yeah, so I just wanted to keep it, yeah, simple and intuitive. But I don't use those words condescendingly.
No, and I don't either. They're not meant to discount the forethought and the dedication or the work ethic. It's not to suggest that, well, one and done, you know, that must be great. One of the reasons I ask about this, because we're talking about the art of creating and performing and the context of where that work is done. This might seem like a weird tangent. Jen, do you follow NBA basketball in any way?
Casually.
Okay. The reason I ask this, and again, this might seem weird. So for those who don't know, there's this, as we're speaking, and probably by the time this is reaching people, the whole thing might be done for the year, but there's this bubble thing happening with the NBA because of the pandemic. And so basically they're playing games. There's no audience.
That's right.
And what I have noticed about this is a psychological, I feel like a psychological difference between what we're seeing in the bubble play and what we would normally see when there is a performative aspect, an audience in front of these players. Because I have gone to NBA games, and I don't know if you have you ever been to an NBA game?
Yeah, I've seen the Raptors.
So I don't know if you've ever watched the warm-up, but these players will shoot around, and I'm going to make a general statement here. When they're shooting around in the warm-up, it's like they can't miss. It's remarkable. The game's not on.
Yeah.
Psychologically, they're relaxed on some level. Like, they're just warming up, and they're hitting everything. Like, I've seen it. I've seen people hit, like, 50 threes in a row, and then the game starts, and they start to stiffen up a little. They choke up just a little bit. They can't do it the same way. It's obviously different. Psychologically, it's different.
Yeah.
So this draw, and so the bubble play has been interesting because I think the level of play is better than when they're in front of the audiences. At first, it was weird, and then I think they're actually performing better because there's sort of that less eyes and on them. While, like, obviously they know it's being televised and all that stuff. So my point here is,
I'm following.
You go into the recording studio, and there's a real like intent there. There's a psychological shift. I know this from my own experience. As soon as someone says we're rolling, the laughter kind of subsides, the feeling changes, like, okay, it's on. And then also, I'm sure you've had this too, the demo of a song feels amazing. Like that first, you know that demo is not simply your first thought. It is you practicing and coming up with something, and then you decide to hit record on your lonesome. And you're like, yeah, that's it. That's the feeling. Then you take it to the studio. It's not the same somehow. Sometimes it's better, but it's not quite the same. So I am sorry. This is you follow where I'm going here. You're in your kitchen.
Yeah.
You're in your kitchen. It's just you and Jeff. There's no other people that are waiting on you, I don't think. You know, there's no other.
Nope.
It's just these, you know, four eyes probably in a room.
Yeah.
That must shift your ability to transmit your songs, to perform in a way that feels relaxed and natural, and that must teach you something about, like, I think what you're saying is this might have taught you something about how you normally would do things by going into studios, all that stuff. Is that fair to say? This was a very long example, but is that fair to say that you've learned something from this experience?
Oh, no, I think that's a great comparison. And, I mean, I don't do demos usually because they only break my heart. So when I go into the studio, I often try to capture first takes. But even then, the amount of pressure I feel, not in a bad way, but I do feel this enormous pressure because I'm there. It's very expensive.
Yeah.
There's all of this stuff happening. And And I can question, is this song good enough to warrant going into a $500 a day studio? You know, like all these things can come up. And yeah, pressures get in the way. And then something, yeah, I felt that way too. Like I could just access something more akin to what I perform, the music I play. And I spend a lot of time, you know, after my son's gone to bed, this is the kind of music I play when I'm at home.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I practice and I love to play with the band, and bands know that, as you probably know, bands always know, like, oh man, the show was great, but oh, that rehearsal was so great.
Yeah.
You know, like you always have like your best take, and it's always when you were rehearsing. And there was no pressure. But yeah,
that's psychological and perception, isn't it?
Like I think it's just head games.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because everyone else in the crowd will be like, no, that was great. I mean, I've seen you before. That was the best I've ever seen it. And yet I do it all the time. I had to learn to stop, you know, downplaying or, you know, the awkward thing if someone pays you a compliment as a performer and you say, well, you know, yeah, we kind of missed that note.
Yeah,
or I was a bit, that one time I missed it. And they're like, okay, I guess I won't ever compliment you again. Because what the hell? Yeah, we all do it. We all our brains are wired that way. We go negative. The worst thing that I do it all the time. 10 emails with compliments, the one that is not is the one I respond to. And it's just,
my God.
You know what I mean? And what? Do you do that?
No, that's my life. I mean, I'm like, what? Yeah, 100%. I'm still trying to just like overcome an insult that was hurled at me probably when I was like 5. I'm like, gotta overcome that.
It's the way our brains are wired. Like I've read about this, and it's just the way we tend to dwell on the negative. And you'll get, like in your case, 10 perfect reviews, like reviews that say your record's great, but the one that says it's not the greatest thing ever. Oh, that's the one you remember. It's just a weird negative bias we have. And so anyway, all this to say, I am very much a fan of sort of verite in art. You know, well, that was the moment. That was the time. I know. I think you are too. The songs, the last time I saw you play with your band, the songs I knew of yours had changed and shifted. Mm-hmm. Like some of my favorite artists do that, where, you know, the record, the thing they made in the studio, that was the day. Everything else, the song has a life of its own. It doesn't have to be that day over and over. It's not Groundhog. It's, you know, you can't just keep reliving the song in some sense. So we have to let go of things. And so it seems to me that even making these choices that you and Jeff made was, that's what it is. That's what it was. And that's what we're going for. We're going for what it was, not what, you know, some fabrication of something in our head or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I had wanted to make a record like this for a while. I mean, I probably thought that I was making something closer to this with Angels of Death, recording it in the church and putting the band, even though I wrote the songs, you know, cerebrally and really put a lot of attention to sort of crossing my T's and dotting my I's with the concepts in that record, putting the band in the room and saying, okay, we're going to play this live together, and kind of putting us in some sort of situation of which spontaneity had to have, you know, had a place was important to me. But this record, I had kind of said this to Jeff before, like, I don't want it to be in a studio. Like, I don't want to go back into like a precious situation. I want it to sound almost more like the 4-track recordings I used to make in my 20s.
Yeah.
And I want it to have that kind of life, that quality of that tactile quality of, you know, just abrupt changes and things. So this had also just been something I had wanted to do. And that last year, that's the time that I did it.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, my relationship with records is changing a little bit myself, in that I am starting to see them not just simply as music to entertain me when it's out and whatnot. I do see these things as personal archives for the artists, you know, a documentation of a time and place. And in that sense, I think these records are a reflection of something, a reflection of a shared time, but a reflection of what the artist is thinking and feeling. So with that in mind, I know the moon plays a role in terms of this being kind of a reflective orb. Talk about the moon and its relationship to Monarch Season, if you don't mind.
Well, I mean, where I live, I get a spectacular view of the moon rising almost to its setting. And I picture going up the stairways where I live, and you can see it. It's always kind of in the windows. When it's out, it's in the window. It's really a sort of, it's really omnipresent in the evenings in my house. And I also, I felt like these songs, they kept mentioning the moon. So I sort of collected all the songs that were mentioning the moon that I had.
Yeah.
And the moon is like a very, it's kind of mythologically characterized as the feminine. And it's also a reflection. It's also a reflected light, which I think is so interesting. And I had said when I was writing for Brendan from Paradise of Bachelors, he had asked me to talk a little bit about the moon too. And I had kind of realized that I had gone through this, you know, cycle in my life where I pinned the light actually onto the rock itself and would consider the moonlight when really it's the sun's light.
Yeah.
And I just, I know that I knew that. I'm not saying I'd literally forgotten, but I was just, I had taken for granted that those two things were very separate, that the stone and the light were different. It was a relationship that was creating this experience of the moonlight that I was having so powerfully every time I saw the moon. And so it felt like also what was happening was the concepts in this record were very much about being in relationship to something.
Yeah.
And then I just had respect for it being a heavenly body that also reflects the sun, which feels so powerful and then sets and then gives the sky over to the moonstone that then reflects its light. And I was just cherishing it so much, just in the way, I guess, when you get older and you can like revisit a concept for the first time when maybe they taught you that in school and you're like, wow, that's so interesting or whatever. And then you live enough years where you're like, what? Oh my God, I need to revisit that. So it was like,
no, it's astute. I think we all call it the moonlight, but it's true. It's not really, the moonlight is the sunlight.
It's the sunlight. And I was just, re-cherishing it. And then in that way, I was just at a place maybe in my life where I was re-cherishing the concept of relationship and individuality. And that ended up being kind of one of the muses.
Well, I think one of the things we probably also start to think about as we get older is that all of our personal relationships are some reflection of us. The people we choose to have in our lives, they say something about us, good or bad. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. You mentioned that the moon is often mythologically characterized as feminine. I don't know if you said it is also considered to be a symbol of maternal, you know, a maternal symbol, but I do. Mm-hmm. I am, as a parent, as you are as well, like I've started to see how my children are basically a reflection of me. And so mm-hmm. when we're upset with each other, I realize we're upset with aspects of ourselves that we're seeing in each other somehow. Not always, but I think when I step back and be like, what was that about? What was that discussion or debate or argument or whatever about? Well, they were acting this way or I was acting this way. And I realize we're just little reflections of one another. Mm-hmm. And so you're kind of almost, I've said this numerous times with people as well, like I think when you're angry at someone, generally, you're mostly a little bit angry at yourself.
100%.
Yeah. So is that, so again, it's good and bad, this notion of reflections, of people, of relationships being some, we see ourselves in the other person, whatever the nature of the relationship is. That's kind of swimming around in here perhaps as well, both for you maybe as a mother, mm-hmm. as you know, a person in different kinds of relationships, as a friend, as a lover, what have you. Is that fair? Mm-hmm. Is that all in there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I've become far more interested in what I project onto situations than I am in I think I spent a lot of time being very interested in just the reactionary circumstances of relationships and, you know, thinking another person did this or another person did that. And now I'm way more interested in what I'm projecting onto the situation and what I can adjust and what is mine and what, you know, and just kind of owning my projections. And it just feels like just better, more healthy for me to do that. So yeah, it is kind of this, it does deal conceptually with that, with just how we're in relationship with each other and how we're always, and in gravity with each other, you know, and how we're affecting each other all the time. And that is a truth to me, that the moon being a reflection of the light, of the sunlight, is a truth to me. But also the moon governing Earth, the blue planet, the water planet, is also a truth to me.
Yeah.
And it governs the waves that I listen to. Every night I fall asleep to the sound of these waves crashing. Lake Erie is a very shallow lake, and they crash on the shore. And also my tears are governed by the moon, and the water in the wombs of the children that come onto this earth are governed by the moon. And I also work as a doula, and I also say things like, pay attention to the moon when you're pregnant, and don't pay attention to it for the news, but pay attention to it for the feeling that it's also a leader in how the water with it, that the baby's floating in, is going to react. And so the relationship of the moon and the water is also very important to me. And we're made of water. So we're governed by the moon in many ways, this rock, this rock of magnet with this magnetic pull. So just the compassion for the earthly bodies and what makes them move and what makes them, how they react to each other, what governs them, things like that. It's very compassionate towards our experiences on Earth when I keep that in mind, you know.
Do you feel like we have a particular bias towards, let's say, the sun? Do you feel like the sun, everyone thinks, is John and Paul, and the moon is George and Ringo? Just as important. Just as important. We shouldn't be, you know what I mean? Like, I do feel like we put a lot of, it's horrible, the sun is not out today, or it's raining, there's no sun, the clouds covering the sun. No one says that about the moon. No one's like, I can't see them. Well, I mean, some people probably do.
I mean, I do. I mean, you're going to hear me probably be more disappointed on a cloudy night than a cloudy day. I'm like, no, I can't see it.
Does that say something about us, that we have a sun bias and that the moon is just, the moon is the moon? But to your point, which, by the way, totally valid, it is the water god. If we have a water god on Earth, it's the goddamn moon. And we are 90% water. So, I mean, I don't know enough about this stuff, but people say they're cycles. Things are controlled.
They're cycles.
Things are controlled by the moon, their personality. Oh, a full moon tonight. We do talk about the moon as this controlling, more of a controlling entity. Then maybe we do the good day sunshine. Sorry for all the Beatles references, but the sun.
That's okay.
The sun gets, a lot of the spotlight, no pun intended, if that makes sense.
Well, I mean, I think we are the sun's children in many ways, because it's a living light, and it is we're sort of manifestations of its heat and energy, and it creates a lot of growth. And it's, you know, I always think, okay, you know, thankful for the sun that creates all this life around that I'm a part of. But it does, it's sort of known as the more masculine, the masculine energy.
Yeah.
I as a female identified person, I am very aware of the moon too, because I have cycles within my body that I experience monthly, as well as the moon. So I just naturally tune to it, because whether or not I'm in sync with it or not, doesn't necessarily matter. It's just the other thing that has a monthly cycle that I see all the time. And so the sun doesn't have, it more has like an annual cycle. And I guess, I'm actually not sure about the sun cycle. I know it.
So you have a moon bias. Most of us have a sun bias.
I have a moon bias. I'm I'm like, what's up, moon? Good night, moon.
Good night, moon. Hello,
moon. I slept with my window open last night just to let its light in. I don't usually do that, but on full moons these days, on full moons this time of my life, these years, I'll open the window and let that kind of blue light in.
What is that? Wait a minute. What does that mean, these years, this time in your life? Why is the moon more important to you? Obviously, we're talking about it. Obviously, it has infiltrated your artistic practice on Monarch Season. It's in your, it's on your mind. But why?
Always.
This, but what you say at this point, well, in particular, why?
Well, because I compare it to, I compare it to maybe 4 years ago, four or 5 years ago, where the moon, the full moon, would rise, and I have always been like a moon loving person, so full moons, I'd love to go out, love to see them. And then around 4 or 5 years ago, around maybe even just a bit less than that, maybe when I was kind of coming up on 40, the moon would rise. It was around full moon. It was too intense and I would want to go inside. I would almost close up my curtains. Mm. It felt like an eye. It felt like an eye that was watching me. I was like, suddenly I don't feel like I'm watching you. Why do I feel like the moon is like all seen? And I would just go inside. It was just an intense time of the month, the full moon, for me. And I would more just kind of be like, oh, here comes the full moon, time to fold up the chairs and go inside away from its all seen, you know, energy. And now I'm just really happy to have come through all sorts of like challenges and difficulties, and feel like when I see a full moon now, you know, I'm throwing open the curtains and being like, my old friend, the full moon. You know,
it's interesting too that we can look at the moon. We can stare at the moon for forever. We can't really look at the sun. That in itself,
I know,
feels performative. It's like the moon is this captivating performer, and the sun is like, I will blind you. I will blind you if you look at me. Don't look at me.
I will burn your retinas out. Like it's too much. Yeah. I know the sun is like very powerful, and you know, it's lovely to experience its little, you know, circle of light all night long. You get to receive its light, but in such a mild, friendly dose.
Absolutely, absolutely. You were saying something there also about gravity, and I know that I've received some context for the record that suggests that you have been engaging in personal experiments on the effects of microgravity. And what it says, what it says here, maybe you don't even know what this means. It says here, in this context, increased immediacy, intimacy, domesticity, simplicity, brevity, and directness. I'm not really familiar with microgravity. We were talking about the moon. You were talking about gravity. What is microgravity in relation to you and Monarch Season?
I mean, I'm not entirely sure. I don't think those are my words, but maybe what it can mean to me, because you're asking me.
This is the biographical information I've received, and you say, "Oh, okay, this is news to you." That's fascinating in itself. Maybe the sun wrote this just to throw everyone off. But yes, do you know what that means at all?
I mean, microgravity, I don't know what it means in a specifically scientific way. Yeah. And I'm sure it has a fascinating answer. I don't want to look it up because I'm afraid to move my phone, but you should look it up.
Okay.
We should find out what it means.
I'll figure it out, yeah.
But I can speak to paying attention to the small things suddenly, and knowing that in the small experiences, for me, in the sort of small experiences, instead of putting my attention into really big, big theoretical things that sometimes I get caught up in thinking, instead I started to look at what was right in front of me and becoming fascinated and interested in my small exchanges with people and my people that were really close to me, and how, you know, those things can, being paying attention to those things can start to change actually the really bigger things in your life. So it's kind of like looking at the small wheel a little bit instead of maybe necessarily thinking about the big wheel of maybe grace or, you know, the divine big wheel, instead looking at the small things.
Yeah. Okay. There's a lot of shifting going on here that by the way, I was just thinking about this. I asked you about basketball earlier. Don't you at one point on your record say nothing but net? That's a basketball phrase. Was that
I
it?
No.
I forgot. What song is this? Sorry. I'm sorry. I don't have it at the...
No, that's okay. And I thought about that, actually, when you were talking about the NBA. I was like, segue alert.
You thought that's where I was going, and I went a totally different way. But that is, that's the... You took that from basketball, didn't you?
Nothing but net. Yeah. Well, that is in relation to me talking... That's in the song Monarch Season.
Yeah.
And I think it says at one point... It's describing these butterflies, and I say they even dance on the waves. Yeah. I could take a picture, but who's to say I'd capture it clearly? And then I thought about the butterfly nets that kids have.
Yeah.
And I said nothing but net, as if you swiped for the butterfly and you didn't get it. But I knew it also had that double entendre of nothing but net, the basketball world.
Yes, very clever. That's good. That's a good. I thought about the butterfly thing when the net, that's what I thought it was. But then as I was, sorry, this is all kind of coming to me all of a sudden that I asked you about basketball, forgot to ask about nothing but net, which is clearly a basketball expression. However, mm-hmm. in the context of a record that is at least, you know, nominally, if not more, you know, connected to the life and times of the butterfly, nets. That's a lot of, they got to dodge some nets. So that's all I was, sorry. That's interesting. You like basketball. No. I don't want to make this all about basketball, but you like
basketball. I do like basketball. Okay. And also at the foot of my driveway, not only is there Lake Erie, but there is a basketball net that my son plays on. So I have lots of really cool pictures of my basketball net, but its backdrop is the lake. Yeah. And it's really cool. And I always think, what a cool place to shoot hoops. That's what I always say to my son. I'm like, wow, what a cool spot to like be shooting hoops, you know? So it's there for me as a visual too.
Well,
Yeah.
It's I love it. I think it's cool. Speaking of orbs, the moon, the sun, basketballs. I mean, that thing's floating in space. It has, you were talking about arcs.
I mean,
you need an arc. I feel like this whole thing.
This is a basketball record.
It could be called Basketball Season. I don't see why it's called Monarch Season. But the other thing I want to.
You know what? I'm down with that.
We got to change
and
it.
I've been wondering whether my merch should just say nothing but net with a butterfly.
That would be.
But then I was like, am I going to get like the NBA on my.
No, case? That's not there. They don't know. They don't know that.
Because I would wear that. Nothing but net.
Please do. I will order three of them, four of them. I'll order one for each member of my family if you make a nothing but net shirt. I'll tell you that right now.
I mean, I think that's the banger shirt. I'm making the shirts this week, and that's the one I think is really cool.
I think so, too. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, beyond all the things we've been discussing, is your how maybe all of what we're discussing is related to your concept of love, because I feel like there is a little bit more... It's somewhat more abstracted in some ways, the themes of love and relationships. I think it's all there. But there on the song Justice, you actually say I love you, which is, I think, unusual for you to be that overt. What's going on with you and love on this record?
Yeah, I mean, I've that's an interesting question. And I can say that I've struggled to inhabit or to let that word be very meaningful for me, like to say I love you, because it's been obviously said a million times and in a million ways. And I, as a young writer, I used to just not think it was relevant, really, to say that as a writer. I was just like, what does that even mean? Like, it's been, I didn't even know what that meant anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the great things about living years and collecting years is things get to change, and you get to witness how things change and resonate for you differently when, like, maybe for the first like 25, 30, 35 years of your life, you're always like, I'm new here. This is new. I'm thinking about this for the first time. This is the first time. But, you know, then I noticed as I started to creep towards 40 and then just slightly beyond, I'm 43 now, I was like, oh, this is changing for me. And I can wholeheartedly say the word love now and think it's such a beautiful, beautiful word and sentiment to share. And I don't feel perplexed inside that I'm saying something cliche or that I'm saying something that's, you know, oversaid. And I don't need to find, it's actually a really simple sentiment.
Yeah.
And it's simple, and I'm glad it just exists in its simplicity. And maybe that's also just that I've started to feel that word as an experience more within myself. and now can just speak to it. Whereas, I don't know, I was just like maybe in a little bit more of a complicated way when I was younger. You know, it was hard for me to wrap my head around such a simple concept. There was a riddle in it for me. And now I'm happy that it doesn't feel like a riddle.
You know, you were saying that this expression was maybe a little less cerebral than maybe some of the other things, but I feel like you've put, if you haven't consciously put a lot of thought into these concepts and these ideas, it feels like, you know, this is the result of a lot of experience, this expression and this sort of letting go of worrying about what something sounds like or worrying mm-hmm. about, I mean, literally, like, or all-encompassingly, I guess is what I mean. What sounds like to hear the word love come out of someone's mouth, what it sounds like to make a record in your kitchen. It feels like mm-hmm. you've really let go of a lot of things. And
thank you. I feel like I have.
Okay. You take it as a compliment. I there's something going on there too. I was fascinated by this and I didn't realize this. And you mentioned it earlier. You've been working as a doula?
Yes. Yeah. I have been working as a doula. I've been a doula since Sunny. I got certified as a doula around when Sunny was 3.
Okay.
Or started 3 or 4. So he turned 12 this weekend. So,
Happy birthday to Sunny.
Yes. Thank you.
And to you. You mentioned you're 43. Happy birthday to you. I forgot to, I was going to interject.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was 31 when I had him. And so, yeah, I became a doula certified at around 34, 35. And yeah, that's something I do part-time. I'm not a full-time doula because I'm often traveling.
Right. So two questions. What compelled you to become a doula? And also for those who maybe aren't sure what that consists of, what do you do as a doula per se, Jen?
Right. Well, a doula is a birth companion. And it's somebody that helps a woman, a female, and her family, whatever that looks like, through the course of, I'm a labor doula, so I help people through their labors.
Okay.
And it's different than the midwife and the doctor, but I work alongside midwives and doctors. Mm-hmm. But I work for the mother, so when the mother begins to experience labor, she calls me. And I go to her, and I don't leave her side until the baby's earth side and feeding, however the baby's going to feed, and then I leave. So it's sort of your constant companion through the entire labor experience.
Right, okay.
And I wanted to become a doula because I had my baby when I was 31, and I remember afterwards, I had my son at home with a midwife. And I remember thinking afterward, oh, wow, there's so much that I didn't know,
yeah,
like about childbirth. I was like really actually kind of floored about how little I knew.
Yeah.
And so I thought there's so much room to share this experience and help others through this experience. And also it felt like immediate community and feminist work to me when I was in that place in my life. And it felt important to help and facilitate healthy births for women. And I don't discriminate what kind of, a doula never discriminates what kind of birth you're going to have.
Yeah.
She helps you through whatever kind of birth you want to have. So I just kind of, I always say I tune to the family, I tune to the mother. And I'm just a companion for the mother as she gives birth.
No, it's remarkable. It's a very special. It goes without saying that it's a special occasion, of course, labor. But it is particularly. We had both of our we were able to have both of our children in our living room in Guelph and with midwives present, and I feel very fortunate about that. There was something mm-hmm. very comforting about. Doing it was actually one of the main reasons I didn't want to sell our house. It's like this is a site that I want to preserve in some way, and of course you let go of that as you realize, well, the kids are coming with you, so they're the product of that whole circumstance. So I appreciate that is something that you would want to to help people with, and it's good of you to do that. One of the other striking things about we're talking a lot about reflection here. We're talking about the moon. Mm-hmm. I feel like you're reflecting upon you and your work and your practice, and it strikes me that on this new record, you've revisited a Castle Music song from, I believe, 2006. Veins is from 2006, right?
Too true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is where I first encountered you, Jen, and maybe you encountered me, is when you were performing as Castle Music. And curious, just why this happens from time to time. I neglected to ask Bill Callahan about why he sings and updates a Smog song on his latest album. I'm not going to make that mistake with you. Why? Why have you chosen to sort of revisit at least the melody and the sort of idea of the song Veins on this record?
Yeah, I again, it has the refrain, I'm going to the moon on my memories of two.
Yeah.
So it kind of felt like it was speaking to me conceptually with this like moon collection. And also, I thought it was cool because it was a little bit beyond its years when I wrote it, I guess. And then when I re-sang it, just beyond its years to me, because now that I'm singing it as a bit older version, I was like, oh, that's cool that you wrote that when you were 24 or something.
Yeah.
And now I'm really, you know, now I really am kind of like reflecting more on those words and wanted to revisit them. And I like to play harmonica on that song, and I was playing harmonica on the record, so it just kind of fit in. I've never re-recorded any of the songs off Castle Music Live at the Music Gallery.
Yeah.
And they are, I think there's like eight or nine original songs on there, and they are all in a live version.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love those songs. I still perform many of those songs live, but no one's ever heard of them unless you have this like CDR kind of self put out record that I put out.
I think
like,
I
that we're talking about.
I believe I have that in the bay. I had to unpack all my CDs. I believe I have it downstairs. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like a little thing I did myself. And so I've always, you know, I just kind of was like, oh, you should bring one of the songs just because it kind of cycles back on my own little canon of records. And then also some of my, you know, Willie Nelson revisits songs a lot.
Absolutely, yeah.
I'm a huge Willie Nelson fan. Yeah. I love when he, you know, just revisits songs. I'm so down with that. I love it. To reinterpret your own work, I think is really fun, and it's cool to do that even just as a writer.
Yeah.
So that's why I did it.
No, it's great. Will Oldham does it as well a lot, and he once told me that when I said this to him, he's like, no, they're not the same song. And I said,
right.
What do you mean, Will? Like, it is the same, isn't it? And he's like, no, these are different. They exist in different universes. And then he proceeded to tell me about the alternate universes of, I think it's the DC Comics universe. And I was like, oh, he really went all in on that. And I was like, and now, I was like, what? I don't understand. I totally believe it now. It goes back to what I was saying earlier about different versions. The song is, you know, the recording is just that day. I'm all in on that idea, and I like the idea that it is so foolish of us to say, you know, the song is the song as it once was, and that is it. It's like, why ever listen? Why collect a record? Why listen to anything ever again? Like, really, if that's your argument, then the first time you heard it, that should be enough. That's done. You're done. Every time else you've heard it, anyway.
That's right.
It's really weird. It's a weird.
No, it's kind of like. I respect that answer too, that they're not the same songs. And especially for the writer to recognize one's own change of perspective and growth. Yeah. And that's like, if you can bring that energy every time you perform, if you can bring that energy just to your own music, then you're really getting a lively experience of that. Mm-hmm. And I think those are shows I love to watch. You know, I love it when somebody plays it throwback old school style and just hits those notes from a recording I love so much too. I do love that, but I love to see how things change and grow. It's like you wearing, you know, an old threadbare shirt that you wore in your 20s. Like, I'd love to see that now, you know, and yeah. be like, that's great. And it's like, you get to experience the nostalgia, and also you get to experience that you've changed.
Yes.
You know, and then you get to, it kind of folds that whole moment into itself. And I like that.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. Do you think the moon resents the fact that we call showing our bare ass mooning?
Mooning? Yeah, I mean, that's a big question.
We just talked about the bias of, you know, people are like pro-sun, right. anti-moon, and what bigger insult? Hey, moon, check this out. This is what we call, when we show people our asses.
It's like the pale cheeks.
Yeah, what the hell? Well, it depends on it depends. They're not always pale, if I may, but yeah. it's right. Yeah, but it's weird.
They are compared to, like, probably, for most people, compared to what their other.
Sure.
You know, sure, I mean, they're most often, it's like relatively pale, unless you are a nudist.
That's right.
There's nothing.
That's
it's
right.
It's all one. It's all one.
We're finally getting some light, just like the moon is a reflection of the sun. We're like, we want to get some light on our moon. And so there's something, I think I've cracked the code here on some level. And I said crack. Okay, this is bad.
Oh, God.
There's a lot of bum stuff going on. Jen, normally at this point, and I know it's hard to say what's next, given that we're in a pandemic, but what do you...
Yeah, what is next?
I have been asking people, like, what are you going to... Like, obviously, you're doing some press because we're talking. And the record's going to be out in the world and all that stuff. But what is your... Do you have plans for keeping the record in people's... view in the next weeks and months?
I mean, I gotta level with you. I have not one zero thing planned. It's bizarre. I mean, what a strange time. I'm releasing this record, and of course there's many questions as to, is this a good time to release a record? And I just kind of thought, well, I'm gonna release it because it is a weird time.
Yeah.
And because some things get so locked into habits that I was like, let's release it now because it's weird. And it's unknown. And that's just more interesting than, you know, having known how it always goes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've had to kind of reduce it down more to the gesture of just sharing. It doesn't seem like something I can necessarily build upon or work for or, I don't know. I've just kind of, so yeah, it's strange. I'll probably think up a few, extensions of that gesture to share, but I mean, I haven't played like live music since the time I saw you in Edmonton.
Yeah, like February.
I don't know. Yeah, like yeah. I, let me tell you, I miss it. I really miss playing music, and I truly do miss having, a career or a job.
Yeah.
I have attended births this summer, but I do feel a little lost in terms of what to do with myself. Not in terms of like, what should I do with my time, but just what I have things to do with my time. It's just what to do as a musician right now.
Yeah.
It does feel like a little bit strange, but I hope that I'll just share it, for the next little bit and not, you know, take up too much space doing that, but make sure that the gesture is just generous to share that I have something to share. And people seem to be, some people are saying that they're listening more, and
some people are saying
they're not listening at all. Okay, so then it's for, you know, for the listeners, then for people that are listening and that are having that type of experience at this moment, then I'm just sharing because I have it and it's done to share, and I could wait for a more opportune time to share, but that doesn't seem like the thing to do. It just seems to release it and let it go.
Have you, I appreciate all your candor there, and I feel badly that you have these feelings of uncertainty, I guess it's like vocational existential angst or something, but, and I appreciate that.
Well,
so a lot of us are kind of dealing with that, on different levels for sure. But have you, it's not like I don't have things to do. Have you been writing new work in this time of suspension?
tons, no. Yeah. Because, you know, the pandemic started in March, and really I've just had my son at home with me for, you know, and he's 12. Well, he just turned 12. So he's, you know, he's been around, and it's been very cool to be hanging with him. He just went back to school, his choice. I gave him the option to stay home.
Yeah.
He really wanted to go back, and I let him be the leader in that. I wanted him to stay home. I think I was being pretty overprotective, but he wants to go back and see his peers. He is an only child, and I fully respected his choice.
Right.
We're making it work. And really, you know, I wouldn't say I'm feeling necessarily angsty, but I haven't experienced the pandemic as an where I've been able to really think about it, because I've mostly just been trying to be a good parent through this. And it's been incredibly challenging. And it's been like a lot of time with family. And it hasn't been about alone time. It hasn't been about being alone in my house all alone. That has not been my experience.
Yeah.
But I have, over the past 2 weeks since he went back to school, had time on my own to think about it. And now I'm being like, oh my gosh, what is coming? You know, like, so I'm kind of late to that experience of like having any time on my hands to like consider what has just happened.
And
it is catching up on me a little bit to be like, oh wow, this is quite big. Like, I know it's been big, but I'm just having the time to even process it now. So I haven't been processing this particular moment on our globe, in our social political climate, in our health climate, our government climate. I've been more just trying to make it okay for an 11-year-old.
Yeah.
So
I'm
only starting to have the time to process it, and I haven't written to this moment yet. I haven't gotten there.
Okay. That's fair. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if people want to learn more about Monarch Season or you where would you like to direct their attention? I will say I ordered my copy of your record from the eBay Fix website, I believe is where I ordered it from. And so I urge people to do that, because it comes with like a special, what is it, like sheet music?
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, that was one thing we changed for the pandemic, because I figured if I couldn't go around to play the music for people, I would send the music to people.
Yeah.
And also my son had started piano lessons last year, so he plays very rudimentary beginner's piano, and I just love it. So I was like, let's make a songbook. Yeah, so you can go to jennifercastlemusic.com, I think, and then it has all the places you can buy a record. And I think if you're in Canada, it sends you to the eBay Fix. And if you're in America, it sends you to Paradise of Bachelors.
Okay.
You can stream it if you have streaming services. And I've had mouthfuls to say about the good or the bad about streaming services. But now that everything that I actually love about music, which is live and tactile, now that all of that has very much been put on hold, I do feel really lucky if you buy my record right now. And I feel lucky if you stream it. I feel lucky if you do the pre-saving on Spotify or whatever. I'm like, thank you. Thank you to all the gestures of support that you do online. Anybody that does that, thank you for any pre-orders anybody does. Thank you for any of that, because I've never been tuned into this side of music before. And now I just feel thankful if somebody has the extra dollars or the extra cents to support. It really means so much at this moment.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I appreciate the ability to spread the word about it as well here, if that helps. And if there's a song from Monarch Season that we can go out on here, Jen, what would you select and why?
What about the song Moonbeam Array? Because that really is the song that I feel is most intoxicated by the moon. And I really feel like the moon had such a big piece of the pie of this conversation.
Yeah, it did. The moon did have a big. It was a moon pie.
It was the big pizza pie.
Yeah.
When the moon hits here, I like a big pizza pie. Which isn't this podcast supported by a pizza shop?
It's still
Trocadero.
You know what, Jen? I'm not even kidding. There is a friend of mine in Guelph 2 weeks ago. Because when I left Guelph, I told them, you know, Phil at Pizza Trocadero. You know what he said to me? He said, if any of your friends want pizza after you've moved, you tell me and I'll set them up. I was like, really? Oh, come on, Phil, that's too nice. And he said, no, absolutely. So I didn't think twice about it. I mentioned it to a friend. Guess who contacted me 2 weeks ago to say, hey, do you still have that pizza thing? I'm like, what?
Who?
My friend Marion. And she
no way.
She said, you know, we're having a birthday party for my mom, and we could use three pizzas. So I'm like, what? Okay. So I called Phil, and, you know, he was like, yeah, absolutely. I'm like,
pizza pie strings? I love that.
From Edmonton, I ordered my friend three free pizzas in Guelph. So
We
talked about this earlier. I think I'm magical. I make things happen or not happen on a whim. And so... Yeah. Anyway, yes, it is Pizza Trocadero for all.
So
your,
this is a full circle.
Full circle. There you go. we'll see what happens now that I've the cat's out of the bag. All my Guelph friends are going to be like, "Hey, I heard you talking to Jen Castle about the free pizza. I'd like in on that." Anyway, Moonbeam Array is clever. That's the, so it's a beam or a ray. That's the sort of little. Is that a pun?
Yeah, I mean, it's just I'm either looking at the reflection of the moon on the water or I'm looking at the reflection of the sun on the water. My mother just told me when she was here visiting that the sun, when it sparkles on the water, sailors call that diamonds dancing.
Yes.
And so I wrote that song kind of with that imagery in mind. So whether it's whatever light is dancing on the lake was what I was trying to get at. And okay. And I sequenced that record so that the full moon kind of happened in the middle of it, and I pictured the full moon being Moonbeam Array. So it kind of grows to that song and then wanes away from it.
Man, so much thought into this record about the moon. I get free pizza. You should get a free subscription to Lunar Today or whatever the magazine is. I don't know what it is. But anyway, okay, this is Moonbeam Array. From the wonderful new album, Monarch Season, by Jennifer Castle. Jen, it's always nice to have you on the show, and I appreciate the time, and I hope to see you soon, and I wish you the best of luck in the future.
Hey, you too. All the very best over in Edmonton, and thank you so much for having me.
And throw the key.
so long and wide.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's great to have Jennifer Castle back on the Creative Control Show. This time it was for the 571st episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, Spotify, what have you. The show is there. So please subscribe to the show. Keep up with it. Like it or whatever it asks you to do. I don't know how you engage with podcasts. I simply add them to my library of things I want to subscribe to, and then the episodes show up and I don't have to think about it. Oh yeah, I like that show. What are they doing now? Please consider doing that with Creative Control on whatever platform you use. If for some reason you can't find an episode that you've heard about and you're looking for it, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my semi-regularly scheduled newsletter, please visit my website, vishkana.com. Everything you need to know is right there. You can like Creative Control on Facebook, of course, or follow the show on Twitter at VishCreative, or follow me directly at VishKhanna. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain the existence of this podcast. It really means a lot. I don't know if someone's put out the call. I've had an unusual number of Patreon things have occurred over the last like 5 days. And I'm not used to that, but it's someone, there must be a subreddit or a message board conversation, but someone has decided to tell everyone to support the show on Patreon. So thank you. I don't know what's going on. $6 or more a month gets you exclusive content. So consider supporting the show with a financial contribution today at patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thanks again to liveatmasseyhall.com, where you can watch beautifully captured concerts by great Canadian artists. As I mentioned at the top of the show, one of those artists is Jennifer Castle. So if you like what you just heard, if you're not familiar with Jen, go check out her set at liveatmasseyhall.com. Thanks as always to Pete's Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton for their in-kind support of the show. Thanks as always to my friend Jim Guthrie, who lends me some music for the show. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode with Jennifer Castle. And maybe you'll check out the back catalog of episodes, which also feature at least one other episode with Jennifer Castle, maybe two, I can't remember. And otherwise, I hope you're well. And we'll continue listening to the show because I'm going to keep making them for as long as I possibly can. So thank you. Talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.